Congratulations! You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes, and also Mason Wazwaz, but we're doing this intro on the tail end of holiday build-up time, so Mason's gone off to her family zone. Anyhow, we got a hot interview for you. Let's just get right down to it. Okay, we're out here in beautiful Oakland, California, speaking to Sophia Wang and Lisa Rybovich Crawley. Okay, Mason, get right down to brass tacks.
Well, I want to know about heavy breathing and where it came from.
I actually want to tell the story of how Lisa and I met.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Let's go there.
In 2005 or 6, SF MoMA was hosting a scavenger hunt that was a participatory social practice art game. It was a scavenger hunt that had us running all over the city of San Francisco and the East Bay, gathering things, deciphering cryptic clues, and you had to, in one day, try to do your best to complete this list, and the prize was $4,000.
Wow, jeez.
And teams had applied for, you know, to participate, and we were selected, and we were a team consisting of two cab drivers and me and Lisa.
That's so great.
And Sophia's sister was kind of like the hidden magical fifth wheel at home.
Yeah, she was home base.
Yeah.
So that's how we met, and we reconnected after that project in 2014. Lisa had reached out to me. She was interested in starting to do some sculpture and movement collaborations. And we started talking about what that might look like. And in the process of those conversations, Lisa also proposed that we apply for a Southern Exposure Alternative Exposure Grant to do a project that would be a different expression of the things that we were talking about.
The first thing that Sophia and I ever worked on together was a kind of wacky multi-person collaborative effort at YBCA that we called Jungle Buena. Sophia developed some movement with some sculptural objects that I had made with a couple other artists. And then since then, we developed both heavy breathing, which we will explain in a second, and also another project called Manners that is the two of us developing movement and dance with sculpture and installation. But heavy breathing is basically a series of artist-led seminars that we started in 2015.
We applied in 2014.
Okay, yeah. It kicked off in 2015. Basically, we invite different artists to lead a session that involves some type of conversation about ideas that are related to that artist's practice with physical movement.
There have been all kinds. There was one I was really sad that I couldn't go to called Sweating with Sappho. Mm. Oh, yeah. What was that one?
Yeah, that was one of our first sessions that was designed by artist, dancer, choreographer, filmmaker Chani Bockwinkle. And she wanted to craft an aerobics class that was drawing movement and content from basically goddess worship, but also the poetry of Sappho. So she brought in Sappho's fragments for us to read together. She also brought in prompts for us to think about what does modern day goddess worship look like. And that took the form of thinking about what pop celebrities or like feminist icons or art idols motivate us and inspire us. She had a series of movements that were kind of like aerobics crossed with, you know, dance class to express our full goddessy selves. And we sort of we had intervals between moving and then also reading poetry together and talking about the expression of goddess worship in our everyday lives.
Can I ask, in a session like that, how much is the audience part of sort of crafting what happens? Is it, how planned is it, or how open-ended can it be?
I think that's varied a lot from session to session. Some people, some of the artists who've led these seminars have come in with a really organized plan, and other people have kind of gone with the flow and responded to what the audience felt like doing. And we should mention that a lot of the artists we've worked with are visual artists. A lot of them are also coming from a movement background. So some of them are actually yoga teachers, for instance, in their real world jobs. And then some people, like Kate, I believe, maybe doesn't have...
No, no. But I was collaborating with another artist, Eli Thorne, who was actually like a college athlete and all this stuff. So we had the good balance of one person kind of taking on the kind of academic-y kind of side and the other person being the resource for all the movement stuff.
Yeah.
And both of us being very interested in bondage and S&M.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah, the range is really wide. I would say, as an example, Olive McKeon, who did a session last year when we were doing a series at the Berkeley Art Museum, sponsored and hosted by the Berkeley Art Museum. She did a session called, was it Group
Dynamics?
Group Dynamics, something like that. It was really just a group encounter conversation where she, you know, gave some background to Tavistock and group relations work that are basically the basis of her creative research right now and her dissertation. And then we had a conversation that was pretty much a response to those prompts. And there wasn't movement planned. There wasn't like any set form for the hour we were together. People were free to like move around or stay seated or mess with the furniture. She set that all as possibilities, but didn't make us feel obligated to do anything. It wasn't comfortable, but it was really interesting. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you know, like a session like yours, Kate, or
we were like full on workout video status.
Right. You had.
Did you have headbands on?
I think so. Yeah. I think at least Eli had like a leather head because it was. Yeah. Anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was very structured.
Right.
And rightly so for the whole sub-dom situation.
Right.
There was also one in a motherfucking swimming pool.
God, I'm bummed I missed that one. It seems so incredible.
Olivia Mole, yeah. Right? How'd that go?
I think that was collectively one of our favorites of all time. Maybe we should back up for a second. So the first year that we did heavy breathing, it was a roving enterprise, and it took place at all sorts of venues, including art spaces such as Real Time and Space, where we're talking right now, and Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, The Lab, places like that, but also Golden Gate Park, Lake Merritt, more public spaces. So Olivia's session was awesome because it took place in the Chinatown YMCA swimming pool in San Francisco, and it made the site a integral part of the conversation and experience. Mm-hmm. So she borrowed underwater speakers from a synchronized swim team.
Nice.
And then she performed this lecture that she wrote that was a very kind of stream of consciousness. Sophia, do you want to...
My recollection of it was that she was bringing in Luce Irigaray's response to Nietzsche around the theme of world material and the feminine goo that suspends us in the world.
I love that.
And she was editing in clips from Beavis and Butthead and Ren and Stimpy. You know, it sounds heavy, and it was heavy, but there's a lot of humor to it too. And I think what was really beautiful about the piece was that she was out of the water in this little like office area, like the lifeguard office, reading through a microphone, and her voice was being transmitted through these underwater speakers. So as you're swimming underwater, you could hear it. And then if you popped above water, you could also hear it, but the sound actually traveled better underwater than it did out, you know, in the air.
Yeah, so it became this negotiation with your body, actually being able to position yourself in the water so that you could hear, and your breath, like being able to come up for air. And so I actually ended up feeling like this was a great way to encounter dense information, because if you've ever sat through a class, a seminar that is dense with theory, there is a drifting in and out. Like, you actually need to absorb and then like rest and reflect. And that was happening really organically in Olivia's session, because you'd hear some quote from Irigaray or Nietzsche and you'd be like, okay, I'm absorbing those words, I'm absorbing that syntax, mm-hmm. and I'm just gonna float for a little bit and come back when I'm ready.
That's awesome. So word to the wise to all our student listeners, be listening to that stuff in the bathtub.
That also reminds me of how the project really came to be was Sophia and I, together and separately, both had discovered that moving our, well, I guess we had discovered that so much of academic thought and discussion happens in a really sedentary environment where you're sitting in a classroom or a critique group or political action meetings or what have you, reading, yeah, libraries. And there is something to physically moving your body that allows for a different kind of relationship to the information and a different way of absorbing information. And I think when Sophia, didn't your dance practice develop while you were doing your PhD?
Yeah, you're a dancer.
I'm a dancer, and I started dancing while I was writing a PhD dissertation on poetry and spending a lot of time sitting at a computer in a library. And I just started training in dance as a way to balance different modes of being. And I realized that it was crucial to being able to move through ideas, to be able to move through my day. And when I finished my dissertation and started performing, it seemed like a natural transition to think about how might you combine research-based work and exploration with movement and performance and actually being in active relationship in time and space with other people.
Yes.
I mean, I'll speak for me, but I think I speak for both of us here, that through the project, we have broadened our community to a lot of other really interesting artists and thinkers in the Bay Area. And it's been wonderful in that way. And unlike your typical studio visit where you're kind of, you know, in somebody's space, this kind of takes you out of the studio into a different space, sometimes outside, sometimes inside. And I think because it's awkward to physically move while talking about, you know, big ideas, there's a humor that becomes available. It kind of, I don't know, it makes it more accessible, more fun.
I know there have been times when I'm walking away from a lecture, like with the person I went with, where I feel like also being talked at in lecture form can cause pent-up hostility, and that walking and talking with the person can kind of alleviate some of that tension.
Yeah, good point.
There is a discipline that's required to sit and attend and listen, and it has its place. But when you think about like what discipline is for, like disciplining of bodies and disciplining of minds, then the natural instinct to rebel.
Just to just rip off all your clothes and scream.
Like, just fuck this and like turn the table over and go outside and have your own experience about the ideas.
Big time.
This is all momentarily reminding me of an experience I had in grad school where there was a student who, because of a chronic pain issue, would come to class with a cot that she would open up, and she would lie down on the cot and participate in class lying down. Amazing. And, you know, there we understand this as codified at universities as basically disability support. You know, like if you are
codified.
That's how it is, right? Like if you can show and prove that you have a disability, then you are given leave to have these accommodations. Mm-hmm. But there's like limits to what counts as a disability. And I remember thinking like, I would love to be in this class lying down, like not looking at everyone's faces and reactions, but like listening and thinking and, you know, mm-hmm. looking at the ceiling, having your, you know, therapist couch grad school encounter.
So what's, you just did one of these, right, in November?
Yes.
At the SFAC?
At the SFAC.
Are you about to roll out another, like, flight of of sessions?
So we are entering a reflection zone right now, and we do have some ideas percolating for shapes that heavy breathing might take in the near future. But last month we were at Commonfield?
Mm-hmm.
Last month we were at Commonfield in conversation with two other Bay Area organizations, the Living Room Light Exchange and Place Talks. But prepping for that conversation, which was all about institutions and third spaces, and it was just an opportunity to talk about heavy breathing and where we've been and where we want to go. So basically, when we got the alternative exposure grant, we did a year's worth, or not a year, we did 4 months worth of it was every weekend for 12 weekends, is that right? And each one at a different location with different artists, and it was a lot of work.
I can only imagine the amount of like emails and logistical stuff.
There's a lot of that.
Google Docs. Nightmare.
Yes, it is not sustainable. And then the Berkeley Art Museum invited us. They invited us to do, what was that, 9 months, I think, worth of programming. Yeah, and that was one session per month, which was way chiller.
Got some big
chiller.
Names in there. Stephanie Sahuko, museum people.
Uh-huh. And both years were really amazing. They were also really different from one another. And so now we're kind of looking back and thinking about the pros and cons of either working within an institution and with institutional support, but then also being free range and, you know, having the freedom that that entails, but also the extra work and struggle of, you know, securing venues and bringing, you know, finding and bringing whatever kinds of like AV and technical support, finding electricity when you're like in Golden Gate Park. You know, there's all these things that
and paying artists.
Oh, yeah, and money. Yeah. So, yeah. So Sophia and I are talking amongst ourselves and also talking to friends and people in the community. And I feel like we also should put it out there to your listeners that if anybody out there has ideas or suggestions or like if you've come to a heavy breathing event or even if you haven't, what might the future of it look like? I don't know. We're kind of open right now.
There's a lot of interest in bringing this to other cities.
Oh, great.
I bet.
Which could be really rich. And Lisa and I had talked about different forms it could take. So one way to make this extremely portable is to have it be in a document online form of some kind. So as an example, Christian Nagler's session at the lab, Cosmoconvulsive Exothenics.
Rolls right off the tongue.
Cosmoconvulsive Exothenics was a kind of like a guided lecture, meditation, workshop, bringing together Reiki and somatic therapy with Christian's reflections on risk management tactics that you see in like global finance. But I could really easily see like his text and lecture as something that you could listen to on your own.
Totally,
right?
For
like,
sure.
Here's your guided meditation or here's your workout tape.
Yeah. And yeah.
So
put it on a dance track, take it to the gym.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah, and I've been interested in that form. Like, what how could we bring together lecture format with a more embodied response.
Oh my God, I would love that.
Right.
To like be able to pop on one. We always like to ask people that are that come on the show that are also collaborators if they have any tips or tricks about collaborating.
I would say that that what I learned and what I really appreciate is having faith that it will all get done, and that sort of like how collectives work, like when you have to step back, you know that someone will step forward. Mm. And actually being okay with if you both have to step back, that's fine too, because that may be the limits of that moment. Mm-hmm. But Lisa and I magically, I think, in three years of collaborating pretty intensively on Heavy Breathing and with Manners, have always managed to get everything done and to be really happy with the outcome. And this is while also having jobs and our own independent practices our own deadlines. So I think like basically trusting in your partner.
Yeah, trusting is huge. I think for me it helps that Sophia is like the smartest and most capable human being in the world.
Yeah.
How? But also, I mean, we have a lot of like skill overlap, and I think we also have found out that like one of us is better at something and the other one's better at something else, and you know, like figuring out how to balance, and we don't both have to do everything.
Oh, also, just being okay with being the boss sometimes.
Mm.
So, you know, S&M style, you actually have to know when to be the daddy, right?
Oh, yeah.
You have to be like, actually, I'm going to make...
And when not to be.
Right. You have to be like, I'm going to make an executive decision, and that is going to move us forward.
Yeah, I feel like people really have a hard time, maybe also especially in the Bay Area, I feel like kind of being able to just be like, hey, let's do this. Yeah. And that's that. And I made that decision now. Because actually you're sometimes doing a huge favor to the other people to be able to just, we made the decision when we're moving on. Yeah.
Yeah.
With like the appropriate phase of listening and giving space. And then if it comes time to make the decision, then make the decision. Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. I feel like that's one we haven't really touched on in our asking people about collaborating.
I wanted to ask what were some of the kind of unexpected, I hate using the word outcomes, but like of some of your performances, like what were there moments that happened that you were like, we did not see that coming at all?
I did not know how the SFAC session was going to go.
The most recent one.
Yeah. I knew that it was going to involve a lot of screaming and raised voices in a civic center.
Will you give
building.
Us some background?
Okay, yeah. So Jasmine Yende, who is vocalist for an LA-based Afro-punk band called Fuck You Pay Us, led a session at the SFAC Art Gallery that was about how the body stores and expresses trauma, and how her practice as a punk vocalist, as a musician, as a writer, has been an outlet for her to explore that trauma and then empower herself through it. And so she gave us some exercises on tuning to prepare for performance and like warming up vocally, and then how you like turn the dial up, how you turn the dial down, and then, you know, we were actually doing it all together in this funny conference room that is at the end of the SFAC Arts Gallery. And, you know, it's a formal space. Yeah. It's not a space that feels like you're gonna get crazy and have a mosh pit, but we did actually end up having like a slow motion contact improv mosh that was in the spirit of this, you know, history of femmes in punks context that Jasmine was offering us. So when like before the session, when it became a reality, like the disjunction between the content and spirit of the session and like the environment, like the actual space we're in, I was, all these questions came up, like, what does it mean when you bring in something that is culturally disjoint, you know, like, or remote, mm-hmm. into a space like that? And what what do you lose, or does, like, does that serve the work that you're bringing in, or is it like a, you know, it's like a challenge, you're making them do work to like bridge that gap, you're asking people to do things that they're not comfortable with, but maybe that's the point of it. So anyway, I had concerns about like who would show up, whether people would feel okay about participating, and they did. Mm-hmm. They totally did. But I would love to hear, Maysoon, like your, because you were there and you were hosting us, so your feedback.
I mean, I'm always game for anything. Yeah, I mean, I thought it went really well. I mean, that conference room really kind of a pain in my side a little bit. Although Sophia's encouraging me to find ways to embrace it, which yes. I'm looking forward to doing someday.
Was it the one with those big giant paintings?
Yeah, it's basically our what we call our community room, but it's a meeting room, and it feels very corporate and very much like a meeting room, and it's very hard to shift how it feels. The part that was really powerful for me was when we actually moved into the gallery. So yeah. The meeting room is adjacent to the gallery via these large sliding doors. And so we were doing these, like, you know, screaming sounds in the gallery, and some people were like standing close to artwork and yelling at it or making sounds at it, or like, and I was like standing next to the wall and yelling at the wall. And I mean, for someone who works in that space, it actually felt very liberating. Like, I felt like I created a new relationship with the space. I was like, oh, we're cool now. We have a different relationship. I can do what I want here. Well, I really, I mean, it was like very palpable for me in that moment.
Are there questions, Mamie?
Well, I want to hear a little bit about manners.
Oh, yeah, please. Yeah.
I think the standard qualities of manners projects are that Sophia is moving and developing, choreographing movement, sometimes with other people too, sometimes just herself. Mm-hmm. I am building sculptural environments that Sophia and sometimes other people interact with. We have some conversations about ideas and forms that we're interested in, and then we usually kind of break off, go to our own respective studios or workspaces, come up with some ideas to show each other. And often for me, that means making like small scale maquettes or models of things, or finding some material samples and things like that, doing drawings. And Sophia often will come back to me with movement ideas, and we'll see how those things fit together, if they fit together. And then what I love about collaborating with Sophia is that I get this feedback of like, oh, I like this form, but it would be so much better if it was lighter so that I could lift it over my head, or if it was more structural so I could stand on it, or if it had wheels so that I could move it, or, you know, mm-hmm. things like that that I wouldn't normally come up with just making sculptures in my own little hermetic studio space.
I think a really important phase of our working process is when we come together after the research independent section, and we either like I immerse in the environment that Lisa has created, if we have the luxury of that time and space where Lisa was able to create an environment or at least stage it, and then I could immerse in it for like at least a few days, if not a week, developing a relationship to that space and the materials. Our recent project, which was at the Detroit Institute of Arts, which we called Paperwork, was developed mostly here in Oakland, but knowing that whatever we developed was going to have to be very portable because we didn't have a big budget to bring things to Detroit, and also responding to the conditions that we'd been given. We were performing in the Diego Rivera mural court, which has so much visual information and is so rich and full that, you know, we wanted to think about how do you introduce movement and performance into that is attentive to your environment. So we ended up making probably one of the most minimal pieces we've ever done together that was just me and a roll of paper. and it brought up an interesting question as far as Lisa's role in creating sculptural objects, because in this case, there wasn't like the literal object that she had made that I was working with. But it still felt very much like the outcome of our mutual researching and mutual talking. And we did have studio sessions where we were like playing with the paper, and Lisa was looking at it and you know, reflecting on the sculptural qualities of it, or, you know, what was really beautiful visually. So I loved that experience, and I loved that piece, and it feels like there's a lot more to dig into with it.
How long have you each been in the Bay Area?
18 years for me.
I think it's 14 for me.
How do you feel? Do you feel like the Bay Area has informed your collaboration and your work individually a lot? I mean, it's hard to know when you're kind of like deep in it.
Well, absolutely for me, because when I came here, I came to do a PhD in literature, and I wasn't practicing the art forms that I am now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started dancing in grad school here. I had been a photographer and writer in New York, but I wasn't continuing that practice when I moved here. And so becoming a performer actually had very much to do with the art communities that I connected with here.
I know when I first moved here, I was really excited by Bay Area funk art, mm-hmm. and also art activities that combined dance or movement or performance with visual art. So yeah, I think a lot of my early years of just like absorbing and looking at art history were definitely informed by certain things that were taking place here. I don't know. I mean, I think those references are still really resonant for me. Maybe not in the same way they were when I was like in college and, you know, really in that phase of my life. But yeah, you know, the Bay Area is such a funny place. I think I get a lot of inspiration from the artist-run spaces and kind of DIY ethos that is still really strong here and has kind of like ebbed and flowed since I've been here. But there's been some spirit of that that has always been a part of my experience here. And nowadays, as rents are going up and life is becoming harder to sustain for artists, and it's harder to have like DIY artist spaces, mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious to see how, I don't know, it's like I am not an expert on it, and I don't really pay attention enough to like what's going on in the art scene or something, but I assume that as everything becomes more expensive, art will veer more towards the commercial and things that you can kind of get your money back on, potentially. It takes more of an effort for artists to make work that is deliberately working outside of the consumable. Mm-hmm. And so projects like ours, I mean, there's nothing to sell at the end. We don't, you know, it's like we don't charge money to attend any of this. Also, all heavy breathing is... Oh, yeah.
We have a beautiful catalog.
Which is available for free in PDF form online.
It's true.
Yes, it is. Oh, yeah. And we're redoing our website thanks to Yay. Alter Studio, amazing design yes. group in San Francisco.
So what do you think? It's all going down the drain then?
Yeah, I think it's part of the continual cycle of breaking down and building back up. Mm-hmm. I would say that because I came to performance in the Bay Area through the punk noise music scene, basically by connecting with Brontez Parnell. Yes, Brontez Parnell. And being, you know, inspired and empowered by his proposition that we just start a dance company and start performing, not being authorized by anyone and not being funded, and just do it mm-hmm. because there are spaces. And at that time, this is like 7 years ago now already, like Lobot still existed.
Yeah.
And they hosted our first performance. And because my practice came out of not having anything and any authorization, I still have that as a ethos of what you do, and you figure out money around it, but you know that you have the resources of your community to keep making work if that's what you want to do.
Well, that's hopeful.
Yeah.
In its way.
How about shout outs? Do you have shout outs for any local small spaces that you think are doing great work?
Yes. I want to shout out to Royal Nonsuch Gallery.
Oh, yeah. Fundraiser still going, everybody. Yeah. Chip in. Link in the underworld.
Mm-hmm. And I also want to put a plug that I've started organizing every other week figure drawing sessions with another artist named Kate Pruitt. And Royal Nunsuch is hosting many, if not all of them, for the foreseeable future. Yeah, they're really fun. I think they're going to happen on Tuesday evenings or maybe also Wednesday evenings.
All experience levels welcome.
Yeah, none of us really.
Will you have a model?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's a model. They're 2 or 3 hour sessions.
And yeah, I want to shout out E.M. Wolfman and the Black Aesthetic. Those organizations / collectives are bringing together people and projects and programming that I think are really powerful and necessary right now.
We always like to ask our interviewees at the end of an interview if there's anything else you would like listeners to know.
It's going to be okay.
How much time will it take?
It's going to take a long time, so you have to be patient.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Lisa?
No, I'm not going to follow that up.
Okay, great. We'll leave it with that. Thank you both so much for coming out here on this blustery cold evening. And as always,
congratulations.
Thanks so much for having us on.
All right, I hope everybody has a lovely holiday season. I didn't get any latkes yet this year, but I'm hoping to rectify that. And from the bridge to the other bridge, the island in between, this has been Congratulations Pine Tree. And we even have a whole nother episode for you next week. We're not even taking a break, because that's how much we care about you, the listeners.